Thank you very much, and it's a great honor for me to be part of the UP commemoration of the 150th birth anniversary of our national hero, Jose Rizal. Sorry, it's lunchtime, so I have to inflict another 30 minutes on you guys. But 30 minutes lang po. In 2010, Miguel Cihuco's award-winning novel, Ilustrado, was published to great acclaim in America, Great Britain, and the Philippines. Focusing on the career and writings of Crispin Salvador, a Spanish-Filipino mestizo writer and a former guerrilla who lived in Europe and America, and ultimately makes the decision to end his self-imposed exile by returning to the Philippines, the novel pays homage to Rizal, the exemplary ilustrado, and his Noli Me Tangere and El Filibusterismo. In interviews, Cihuco has stressed that, quote, "The idea of ilustrado is not something calcified and lost in the history books. It's a potentiality. Ilustrado is a Spanish word for enlightened, but it's also a very ironic way of using the term ilustrado because this book is about the failure of the leadership of the elite Filipinos who should know better and how they've failed to really do their part in helping our country," unquote. Cihuco equates ilustrado with the experience of education and travel abroad, and more generally with the Filipino upper class, while also offering a new definition that links the ilustrados of Rizal's time with the overseas Filipino workers of ours. Cihuco's discussion highlights the ambiguity of the word ilustrado, a term capable of bearing both positive and negative connotations. This ambiguity was reinforced in last year's national election, when Senator Francis Escudero's endorsement of Jejo Marbina's vice presidential candidacy featured the slogan, "Ang bisepresidente ko, hindi mayaman, hindi ilustrado, kulay Pilipino." What is kulay Pilipino, I wonder? By sandwiching ilustrado between two adjectives that denote class and racial origins, the slogan puts a negative spin on its original denotation of enlightened or learned. Escudero's use of ilustrado as a pejorative downplays both his as well as Binay's own ilustrado credentials. After all, these men have similar educational and professional backgrounds, which include undergraduate as well as law degrees from the University of the Philippines and stints in government. Escudero's stance suggests that as far as the modern-day ilustrado is concerned, to be called one is a political liability. How did ilustrado come to have such positive as well as negative associations? Now, if we look at the history of the word, we find that ilustrado has been a notoriously slippery term, often associated, if not conflated, with a variety of labels, ranging from elite, cacique, principalia, to middle class, to the haves, and upper class. To complicate matters, the literary and intellectual traditions of the Philippines have been shaped by polemical debates on what Zio Salazar calls the great divide between the principalia and tao, between elites and masses, between the haves and the have-nots. Ilustrados are figured as contaminated, Janus-faced heroes and villains, celebrated for their contributions as the brains of the nation, and individual acts of patriotic self-sacrifice and heroism, while being simultaneously vilified as a class for their betrayal of the revolution and their co-optation by and accommodation with the colonial and post-colonial states. The difficulty of establishing a single working definition of ilustrado in socio-economic, migrant, and educational terms can be seen in the problem of categorizing people like Apolinario Mabini, who counted as ilustrado but whose father held office but was unlettered, who himself held a high office in the revolutionary government, but who never went abroad unless you call his being exiled to Guam by the Americans as a form of travel, and who possessed neither land nor capital and was therefore far less well off in comparison with the urban and provincial elites. Not all who completed university in Manila were rich, even as being wealthy or highly educated did not automatically make one an ilustrado. Not all Chinese or Spanish mestizos were rich or ilustrado, and not all ilustrados were mestizos or creoles. If alternatively one argues in favor of education as the defining characteristic of ilustrado, one is still left with the vexing question of just what degree, so to speak, of education suffices to propel one into the ranks of the ilustrados. In Manila in the late 19th century, one needed to have been one of the 1%, or about 40,158 people, of the population between 1861 and 1898, who graduated from the University of Santo Tomas, which used to be called Universidad de Filipinas, and earned a licentiate or professional title to be called ilustrados. But this qualification did not necessarily obtain in the provinces. More, there were people like Juan Abad and Aurelio Tolentino who were not counted as ilustrados because they were not as well off nor as well educated as Rizal and Trinidad Pardo de Tavera or Emilio Jacinto and Pio Valenzuela, among whom there were already substantial differences in wealth, but whose talents, literary and intellectual output, and eminence made them as arguably ilustrado as the Balmori brothers or Rizal himself, and certainly more ilustrado than their wealthy, educated, but less talented contemporaries. The scholar Michael Cullinane defines ilustrado as an educated elite and identifies four basic characteristics: wealth, ethnic origin, office holding, and education. Cullinane's study suggests that ilustrado is less a class in itself than a subset of an overlapping but also internally differentiated elite that can be distinguished by its spatial location, whether urban or provincial or municipal, its socio-economic status, the distinction, for example, between an urban elite that has a large constituency of Creoles and Chinese and Spanish mestizos, and an urban, mostly Indio middle sector that derived its living from employment in the colonial bureaucracy and the commercial houses of the late 19th century, and characterized by its access to power through social networks that link political players in the municipalities, provinces, cities, and capital, and finally, its relative proximity to and distance from the tao, who make up the majority of the Philippine population. Because women were barred from attending university in the Spanish era, the feminine noun ilustrada was almost unheard of at that time. But there is, in fact, aside from a sociological definition, one additional distinction that distinguished the ilustrado from either principalia or elite. The etymology of the word plays on the metaphor of light, as in the Enlightenment, holding up knowledge via education against the darkness of ignorance, error, and obscurantism. Here, ilustrado is not defined sociologically by mere acquisition of wealth, education, or power, but politically by a critical stance that linked the term with words like progresista, reformista, or reformador, libre pensador. Rizal actually uses the English word free thinker, liberal, volteriano, and most famously, filósofo and filibustero. Ilustración, or the Spanish word for enlightenment, from which the word ilustrado is derived, has a Spanish lineage that goes back to the 1680s and flourished in the second half of the 18th century under the reformist Bourbon king Charles III. Until the mid-19th century, however, the word ilustrado still had religious connotations and was not widely associated with the secularist notion of enlightenment. Instead, it is the term luz, or light, literally, that carried the ideals of the Enlightenment, referring, among many other things, to knowledge and to the intellectual luminaries of that movement. Luminaries, or luces, were men whose enlightened stance was also a critical, often political one, that provoked opposition from some groups while also earning the admiration of others. Ilustrado, in its modern sense of a learned, educated person, first appeared in the Spanish Royal Academy Dictionary in 1869 and would acquire a nationalist connotation in the Philippines in the late 19th century. But as late as 1889, Pedro Serrano Lactao's dictionary did not have an entry on ilustrado. From 1889 to 1895, ilustrado most often appeared in adjective form rather than as a noun form in La Solidaridad. There is a qualitative difference between using ilustrado as an adjective, which treats learning as just one attribute among many other possible attributes, such as being rich or handsome, and ilustrado as a noun, which makes learning the distinguishing characteristic of the person under discussion. Acquiring education in the Philippines and abroad put the ilustrado at political risk of being labeled filibustero. Perhaps the most influential characterization of the ilustrado appears in Rizal's essay, Filipinas Dentro de Cien Años, which refers to an educated class, or clase ilustrada, of Filipino writers, free thinkers, historiographers, philosophers, chemists, physicians, artists, jurists, etc. And this is an original quote from him. Here, Ilustrado encodes the classic idea of the educated Filipino as a deterritorialized entity. And here I quote Rizal. However much the Filipinos owe Spain, they cannot be expected to renounce their redemption, to have the liberals and educated among them wander as exiles from their own native land. Rizal's reference to Ilustrados in exile abroad is a polemic against both the system of education in the Philippines, whose brand of instruction does not properly educate Filipinos by nurturing free thinking, and a system of government that is quick to persecute those who voice their criticisms of the status quo, thereby driving Ilustrados abroad. Rizal's invocation of exile underscores this sense of travel abroad as an involuntary condition brought about by persecution back home and forced upon educated Filipinos by the geopolitical differences that assume spatial form as distance between free Europe on the one hand and colonial Philippines on the other hand. In another essay, Rizal writes that personas muy ilustradas are not lacking in the Philippines, but, quote, in a country where suspicion and arbitrariness are in the service of reactionaries, showing signs of ilustración is like clinking the gold coins in one's pocket when one is in a cavern full of bandits, unquote. For Rizal, travel is simultaneously a politically necessitated flight from repressive Philippines to relatively freer España and Europa, as well as a political project to bridge the differences between these two spaces by working in Mother Spain for the improvement of the conditions in colonial Philippines. As influential as this formulation may be, the link between travel and education is not, however, exclusive to the situation of the so-called Ilustrados. In a speech delivered at the Ateneo Barcelona, Graciano López Haina alludes to the more than 12 to 20,000 Filipino seafarers, or marineros, scattered all over the ports of England, France, America, particularly New York and Philadelphia, and Spain, particularly a town near Barcelona. López Haina projects the propaganda movement's concern with political exile induced by the brutalization and oppression of Filipinos in the colony onto the motives and decisions of these sailors to work abroad. But he nevertheless notes the experience of living abroad can be a transformative experience that enables these soldiers who do not themselves come from the ranks of Ilustrados and the upper classes to educate themselves, become citizens, and acquire knowledge, or in other words, to become Ilustrados themselves. But a critical stance, even a nationalist one, did not necessarily translate into leadership of and support for the revolution that actually broke out in 1896. Key members of the Katipunan were not Ilustrados, but rather members of the urban middle sector of office and commercial house employees and petty bourgeois, and initial support for the revolutionary government in the countryside was led by municipal elites who were not counted necessarily as Ilustrados. Mabini and Antonio Luna were known to have initially opposed the Katipunan-led revolution. The participation in the revolutionary government of urban and provincial elites, including Ilustrados, exacerbated the internecine conflicts among different factions vying for leadership. Many Ilustrados, fearing the ascendancy of non-Ilustrado and quote-unquote military elements in the Republican leadership, withdrew their support of the Republic in favor of accommodation with the Americans. The cementing of education and leadership happened after the outbreak of the revolution, and especially during the American period, with serious consequences for Ilustrados as a group label. The necessary link between education and revolutionary leadership of the nation was famously asserted by Trinidad Pardo de Tavera, who in a speech before a gathering of Filipino and American teachers in 1906 explicitly refuted the role of the what he calls uneducated classes in the movement for Filipinism by claiming that, quote, the Filipinos educated in Spanish schools in the Philippines under a strictly Spanish system were the individuals who brought about the revolution which ended Spanish sovereignty in the Philippines, unquote. Ironically, however, by the time Pardo de Tavera made this confident but rather disingenuous assertion, the critical stance represented by the Ilustrado and its associations with persecution and exile were in some sense rendered obsolete by the coming of the Americans. The Americans succeeded in marginalizing the Catholic Church, an important focus of Ilustrado political critique in the 19th century, while introducing a different language, one whose checkered history of implementation would exacerbate rather than contain and bridge class differences, a different political project through elections, and a different version of the Enlightenment through utilitarian learning. The system of suffrage that they introduced set property and educational and professional qualifications that barred women, the poor, rebels, and non-ilustrados from voting. Their own brand of education had a distinctly technical, utilitarian bent that promoted professional careers in the sciences, business, and law. They also put into place a system of electoral government that defined leadership in terms of education and awarded elective offices as well as positions in the state bureaucracy to, quote, educated, unquote, candidates, thus turning education into the preeminent instrument of individual and familial upward social mobility and self-advancement, and turning professional titles into qualifications and highly prized status symbols. When the critical stance once represented by the Ilustrados re-migrated back to academia in the 1950s and 1960s, it already bore a different political sensibility and intellectual framework that, although formulated by people who would have been classified as Ilustrado, explicitly repudiated Ilustrado leadership and privileged workers and peasants over petty bourgeoisie, rich and middle-class peasants, intellectuals, professionals and students, and the wealthy class. This new political sensibility and intellectual framework were forged in the context of leftist thought and experiences within both local and international political and social movements that from the Commonwealth era through the Second World War and after had radicalized a small number of Ilustrados. The changing fortunes and definitions of Ilustrado have a direct bearing on the utility and signifying power of the term. Its lack of precision and its multiple shifting meanings make Ilustrado an eminently flexible term that is open to a range of re-signification and appropriations. But it is at one and the same time a contentious term that speaks eloquently of the fraught and contested nature of Philippine nationalism itself. Although education has a correlation with wealth, in the sense that in the Philippines, it is usually the wealthy who are able to afford higher education for their children, with a far smaller group being able to send their children abroad, Ilustrado is not always or necessarily synonymous with the so-called upper class, not even the equally difficult to define term middle class, which stepped into the academic spotlight in the second half of the 20th century. Ilustrado carries with it a historical residue of critical interrogation and political resistance, or perhaps more accurately, political persecution, that can and did take the form of heroic, self-sacrificing individual acts directed against the very classes that have had a history of collaboration and accommodation with the regimes in power. This critical residue of the Ilustrado, or rather Ilustrado as a critical stance rather than a sociological category, can be seen in the equally checkered posthumous career and reputation of Rizal. His name was invoked in the rallying cries of the Philippine Revolution, despite his refusal to support the 1896 uprising. His life and career were held up as models for education and citizenship during the American period. He was aligned with other Ilustrados and then contrasted with the quote-unquote plebeian Bonifacio by Wenceslao Retana and Teodoro Agoncillo, and the cult of veneration and misunderstanding that grew around him was subject to harsh critique by Renato Constantino, which we heard about from Dr. Kibuyen. But he was also recuperated in the 1960s by progressives such as Petronilo Daroy and Dolores Feria in a pioneering revisionist collection of essays that included writings by Claro M. Recto and Jose Maria Sison. The seemingly inexhaustible meanings that can be gleaned from Rizal's life and writings, as well as Rizal's multifaceted afterlives, are revealing of the debates that have shaped Philippine historiography, even as Rizal himself served as the symbolic fulcrum and object of contestation for a number of key debates in Philippine nationalism. Similarly, the ideological and narrative tensions in Rizal's Noli Me Tangere are driven by the interaction between two kinds of Ilustrados. On the one hand, we have Ibarra, the classic ilustrado, a member of the wealthy provincial elite with urban connections, a brown mestizo, educated abroad, idealistic, but not in touch with what is happening on the ground. On the other hand, we have Elias, an Indio, whose urban middle sector grandfather was a bookkeeper in a Spanish commercial house, who was brought up rich, but who elected to finish only a bachelor en artes at the Jesuit College, and whose tragic family history of persecution and misfortunes ultimately radicalizes him and leads to his decision to renounce wealth and upbringing and throw his lot in with Capitan Pablo's men deep in the forest and mountains beyond the reach of the colonial state. Ibarra and Elias's differences in background and social location point to real differences in their political choices and sympathies. The ideological and narrative tensions are resolved in the novel by Elias's noble act of self-sacrifice to save Ibarra's life. Most recently, there have been attempts at re-signifying Ilustrado positively for our times. A notable example is Randy David's comparison of the overseas Filipino workers with what he calls Filipino travelers of Rizal's time or Rizal's generation in terms of loyalty to and concern over the nation. David calls the OFWs influential agents of change and, like the Indios Bravos, the most demanding constituency of the Philippine nation. More, quote to quote, their mobility, their broad international experience, and their rich encounters with various cultures have made OFWs truly modern and a critical fulcrum of our society's transition to modernity. Si Hucos Ilustrado also reconfigures the Ilustrado by imagining the protagonist as an aging expatriate returning to the Philippines after years of exile in America and Europe. Unlike Ibarra, however, who returns as a foreigner to foment violence and exact vengeance on the people and state who destroyed his life and dreams, Ilustrado, the novel, foregrounds the return of the Ilustrado, a writer who was also once a veteran activist, as a wish fulfillment of the Ilustrado act of taking responsibility, of reaching out and connecting with his quote-unquote people. In interviews, Si Hucos has made much of overseas Filipino workers as having the potential to be a new class of Ilustrados. There are, however, crucial differences between OFWs and the Ilustrados of Rizal's time. The idea of the OFW's flight to other countries does not carry with it the historical association of travel with political exile and resistance, but is instead coded as economic necessity and opportunity. Thus, return to the current context of massive labor out-migration from the Philippines does not necessarily mean return to serve the country, but may involve other motives and trajectories, such as return because my contract is over, return because I have no choice, or return because the host country is not safe or does not want to hire OFWs, and return in order to retire, which do not lend themselves to being simplistically coded as active contribution to the nation. More than 120 years ago, a returning Filipino was a figure deemed both foreign and dangerous. Ibarra is set up by Padre Salvi on false charges of rebellion, while Simon returns to the Philippines as a filibuster to foment revolution. Things have changed a great deal since Rizal's time. Now, the returning expatriate is hailed as a hero, bagong bayani, by virtue of having returned, or better still, decided to remain in the Philippines, while those who have chosen to remain in the country readily claim the moral high ground against their deterritorialized compatriots. Whereas the risk before was that the Ilustrado, by returning, brought new ideas that threatened the stability of the colonial regime, but risked being irresponsible because of his tendency to think in abstractions and disregard concrete issues and questions that mattered on the ground. The current Ilustrado as expatriate runs the risk of irresponsibility by not returning at all, by staying abroad indefinitely and taking his and her energies and talents and resources elsewhere. Arguably, the deterritorialization of Filipino labor has acted as a safety valve against an explosive revolution that brings about substantial social change. Conventional wisdom holds that overseas migration, the option of exit or escape, is a way to ease the social pressures that would otherwise have elevated public dissatisfaction with the political regime to the tipping point of a revolutionary violence. But demanding the return of these OFWs to force things to change, however, is now neither politically viable nor feasible given the extent to which Philippine society and economy have already been irrevocably transformed by the labor export trend of the past 3 decades. There has been a social revolution of sorts, but not one that fits the conventional wisdom of overthrow of a regime and the creation of a just and equitable society. Instead, international labor migration and market forces have created a situation in which a large number of Filipinos, in the course of pursuing their interests and those of their families, have become middle class by Philippine standards because of their greater earning power abroad, but who, because of their occupations, are not necessarily considered middle class either in their home country or in their host countries. And they have become middle class in the Philippines by being and often remaining abroad until retirement, enabling them to circumvent the socialization process, whether it means coming from the buena familia, attending the right schools, working in middle-class occupations, marrying the right kind of people that was traditionally undergone by the middle and upper classes in the Philippines. The irony, though, is that their children, many of whom remain in the Philippines, are now more likely to undergo this process of elite socialization as OFW parents enroll their kids in private schools, including church-run institutions. The response of the elites is to eschew the older exclusive schools in favor of even more expensive international schools and to barricade themselves in ever more exclusive residential enclaves such as Punta Fuego, Inasugbu, Batangas. The ranks of the Philippine middle and upper classes remain divided among themselves, but continue to be replenished by children of OFWs who are now instrumental in keeping many of these private schools and other middle-class institutions afloat. OFWs are as internally differentiated and politically divided as middle and upper classes have been historically, and Ilustrado has been historically as well. But they are now also living the kind of lives and gaining the kind of experiences that make it difficult, if not obsolete, to use terms like Ilustrado. Ilustrado is not reducible to the middle and upper classes and their brand of cosmopolitanism, yet it remains bound by association to these classes because its frame of reference is still basically Philippine society and its internal hierarchies. For OFWs who have to deal not only with contradictions internal to their homeland, but with the contradictions engendered by geopolitical and economic differences between their home and the nearly 200 host countries and territories where they lived and work, and not just Spain, the injunction to serve the nation may not hold any water, given that in their own minds, they are serving their nation or nations precisely by working abroad through their effort at bettering themselves and their family, and at times paying the price of loneliness and alienation for being abroad. Their experiences abroad strengthen their local identities and identifications, their ethnic, linguistic, religious, hometown, and provincial affiliations, while also significantly reinforcing their consciousness of themselves as Filipinos. Unable to rely on and unwilling to trust the Philippine state to deliver basic goods and services, they nevertheless expect the Philippine state to protect them when they are abroad and to educate their children and deliver basic social services back home. Back home, which is here, their presence registers in the economy as net capital inflows that as of 2010 represent about 12.8% of the GNP. Their remittances represent income that is harder for the state to capture, but also income that tends to be consumed in everyday life or saved for retirement. Hence, the higher growth in the service sector of the Philippine economy and in areas such as retail, finance, and real estate development rather than in manufacturing or agriculture. They are, for increasingly large portions of their working careers, not here in Pinas, and yet, as primary providers of their households back here, their decisions about what is bought, who goes to school, and what to do with their earnings are often delivered long distance and yet carry real weight and have executory force and real consequences here in the Philippines. Contemporary attempts at re-signifying the OFW as ilustrado are haunted, just as in Rizal's time, by questions of class and space and mobility. Attempts at reclaiming ilustrado as critical stance, not social status, through the idea of return to the country, remain fraught with their own new set of unresolved issues, not least of which is the lack of popular appeal of this option, the social transformation already wrought by decades of out-migration that have changed the parameters of the economy, while simultaneously reinforcing and undermining the traditional elite-driven ways of doing politics, and the beleaguered status of activism that requires and asks of us something more than the by now orthodox adoption of a critical oppositional stance against the upper classes. The terms by which ilustrado can be resignified and reappropriated are not only beset by conceptual and practical difficulties that are as old and fraught as in Rizal's time, but are revealing as well of new realities and challenges that exceed the paradigms through which we have sought to understand them and change our society or societies over the long 20th century. Thank you very much.